Baruch Hashem, you're a bad Jew.
Shalom.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Bad Jew, the place where there is no such thing as a bad Jew. If the bread that you're eating is a lot more flat these days and the digestive process is a lot more uncomfortable than normal, that's because it's Passover. And with us today is Rabbi Markman, who's going to teach us about Passover. But before we get there, Rabbi Markman, how are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you for asking.
Of course. By the way, something that's really exciting is I've never interviewed my boss before. And this is my boss, Los Angeles, just hired me as their chief marketing officer. And I now get the privilege to work with this organization that has done so much for me. It's something that I've actually been praying for a long time, to be positioned in the place in my business to be able to give back to my community. So the fact that I have the chance to do that and work alongside wonderful, amazing, wise people like Rabbi Markman is a huge elevating moment for me in my life, not just on the professional level, but on a personal quality of life level. So Rabbi Markman and to HLA, thank you so much for that privilege and opportunity.
Well, it's our honor as well. And it's great to be here. And we're really excited about the new chapter that you started at HLA.
Wonderful. Wonderful. With that, though, my listenership doesn't exactly know who you are. Maybe right. You've told your life story, but never have you ever told your life story in 4 minutes. This is the 4-minute Bad Jew Challenge, the rite of entry onto the podcast. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Here we go. Let's try it.
Excellent. Echad, shtayim, shalosh.
I was born in Chicago, actually in Highland Park, Illinois, and that was a wonderful place to grow up, especially if you're a nice Jewish boy like me. But, you know, we had our touch of people that, you know, that didn't like us, but that didn't register too much. It just was an aha moment that, like, that's kind of strange. But it was a great childhood, and I went to the University of Illinois because I just wanted my dad to spend a lot of money. And I really didn't know what I was going to do with my life, but this is what you do. And I had started a number of businesses and in high school and in college, and was senior class president of my senior in high school. And I always had an entrepreneurial, I zig when people zag background. And I went to the University of Illinois. I decided to do finance because that's the least amount of credits you needed to get a BA. And I could spend the rest of my time taking all sorts of courses like Swedish and geography and weather prediction and high levels of math and just explore everything. But after college, I went to Denmark for a semester abroad, and that was it. And it changed my total orientation of the world and how I looked at things. And I also started reading Ayn Rand and Tolstoy and changing how my perspective was changing. Went back to college, graduated with a distinction in finance, and put it in my pocket. And I headed off to 5 years of travel. I became a travel manager. I took tours around the world for 5 years. One summer, I went around the globe 3 times. China, Russia. I lived in Seattle, and it was everything was great. Traveling, getting paid to travel, living in Seattle. I went to Israel, though, on some time off. I get bit by the Torah bug, and I got introduced to the Talmud, and I said, this is what I've been looking for, total wisdom. And 7 years later, I graduated as a rabbi. My Jewish background was zilch. I knew Aleph and Beis. I didn't even know Gimel. And I got married, started having children, and my wife and I then moved to Los Angeles to become the executive director I was just a low level guy working at HLA. And then 2 years later, they asked me to become the executive director of HLA, where I've done this since 1994. I've been here since 91, but I took over 94. And finally, I got the opportunity to hire Chaz. And it's been a great run. And we've done a lot of programs, always looking for the new thing. And I know what people are going through, getting them involved Jewishly, because I was not interested growing up Jewish. I was left the reform, as my father liked to describe us. And I got into it later, and I know all the hurdles that people have to go through with keeping Shabbos and kosher and all that stuff. And I felt that my life was so blessed and improved, and my children and grandchildren and a great wife and a great life. I you gotta give the gift that keeps on giving. And I just felt like it was my destiny to keep introducing people to this and using my unique skills and abilities coming from the world I came from. And here we are, the next great chapter being on a podcast. Wow.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, first of all, I had no idea you were quite the globetrotter and let alone an entrepreneur. How many languages do you speak?
I speak very bad English and I can understand Hebrew and some Danish and some Swedish. And that's about it. It's a little Spanish, but I'm not a language guy at all.
Still better than me. And honestly, what a cool journey. I actually really didn't know any of that about you. And anyone who's involved in HLA, I actually wonder how much of that they know about you as well. Although I'm sure you have those that you mentor personally that know that pretty well. So that's pretty awesome.
I try to keep my past, you know, hidden, you know.
Okay. It's very mysterious.
That's the part I'm willing to admit to. I don't want to.
Well, awesome. And if you guys want to learn more about Aish Los Angeles, be sure to check out aishla.com or go to the Instagram aish_Los Angeles or the TikTok aish_Los Angeles. I know what those accounts are because I made them. Anyway, so.
And we got a website. That website is, wow. That needs a little work.
We're working on it. We're working on it. That's what I'm here for. But, all right, Markman, let's talk about the elephant in the room. We've all seen the Rugrats Passover special, but there's a story beyond that. There's something that goes beyond our understanding of Passover here. So what is the real story of Passover? What are we missing?
You know, Passover is all Jewish holidays, by the way, they're not commemorations. They are actually reliving the opportunity that's available at the time. So if you are in Passover, then you are hooking into the energy and opportunity that the Jews went through 3,300 and about 36 years ago. Wow. It's an historical thing that happened. And I just want to digress on that point alone. It's not a myth. You can look it up in the Torah and the five books of Moses. And there it is. And you say, well, maybe some people wrote that, you know, 200 years later, 100 years later, you know, the elders, whatever. Here's the thing. I'm sitting at a Passover table. I'm sitting there with a grandkid. I'm sitting with my grandkids. And they're looking at me, the grandfather. My father's going to sit at a Passover table in Chicago. He's the great-grandfather. The great-grandchild is going to remember that their great-grandfather was sitting at the table with them. Now, go back to when the great-grandfather was the great-grandson. He remembers that. That means that person has seen a 7-generation span in his lifetime. Okay. And everything he heard before, no one was lying because he said, because his great grandfather says, I heard that from my great grandfather. Yes, this is true. And back. So you only really need about 34 Passover tables over the span of 3,336 years to connect the Jews all the way to the Exodus. You know, it's been passed down generation after generation, and my great-grandfather was not in a cult. So there you go. And that is how we know, you know, it's a real thing passed down, because everybody knows that leads to the people that were there, to the 3 million people that actually left. And you can't, you know, a Jew. It's hard to fake a Jew out. They don't take things, you know, like you lay it out. They go, what are you talking about? You nuts?
Right.
So it was a pretty tough story. So that's the historical verification in thumbnail sketch of it. And then the opportunity is in there. What's the opportunity? The opportunity is you are in a cage. You created that cage. Egypt, the Hebrew word is Mitzrayim. That's what we call Egypt. They don't call it Egypt when they're in Israel. They call it Mitzrayim. What's Mitzrayim mean? Mitzrayim means constriction. You live a constricted, all of us live in a constricted life. Okay, I'm wearing white shirts, you know? So we're living in a constricted life of our own making. And on Passover, the Jews left that constriction. You couldn't leave Egypt. It was impossible to leave. It was one of those places like living in a penitentiary. You couldn't leave it. But they left the whole country, the whole nation, Israel. And you can leave your life as well. You can the door's open. Passover night, 4 cups of wine, you know, go ahead and say, I'm free. I'm not going to put up with it anymore, whatever that it is. And you're free to be me, free to be you. You got it. You do you. No one ever was like you before. No one was ever like you after. There's no one you have to compare yourself to. Be you. But what did we leave Egypt for is my last thing I'll say, and you can start asking questions, help guide me here.
I already have so many questions. Okay. Yeah. Keep going.
I let my people go, right? Let my people go. I'm free. I left Egypt. What did I leave for? I'm free. I can do anything I want. No, anything you want is called license. No, you can't do anything you want. You can't sit there and just, you know, I don't know, drop acid and go to rave concerts. No, can't do that. You can, but you got to live a productive life. And that's 50 days after we left Egypt, we got the Torah at Mount Sinai. It's all another story. I don't want to go into it right now unless we want to. And the Torah guides us on how to get the most out of life. And I've been around the world and I've met a lot of cultures. And I wasn't born yesterday. And I do a lot of reading and I've experienced a lot of different situations. And there's nothing like the success of the Jewish people down through the ages of the Torah. Basically, we're 4,000-year-old group of people because we preceded the Exodus. You know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob all preceded the Exodus. We really have 4,000 years of a Jewish culture on this earth. And we're always the top of the game. Wherever you find us, we are always at the top. And we have a culture that always, no matter where you put us on the planet, we grow as a community and we succeed. Because we have the secret, and the secret is the Torah. And there's a lot to the Torah. And so that is what we're free. We're free to live the Torah. And it sounds, oh, that's also restrictive. No, it's not restrictive. I don't know. I just came back from the solar eclipse. I run marathons. I do a lot of other things. I don't feel restricted at all. In fact, I feel empowered to go beyond who I define myself to be. And that's empowerment. Go beyond who you define yourself to be. That's the power of Passover.
I love that. So let's backtrack for a second. One of the very first things that you said that really blew me away is that it's often as perceived that, oh, that original story that we get the Passover Seder from, that we get the Haggadah from, that was thousands of years ago. And thus it's hard to verify, right?
Right.
But something that you said that really pointed out is that you broke down the generations. It really wasn't that long ago. I know that to us mere mortals, it seems like eons ago. But in the grand scheme of things, in the big picture, it really wasn't that far away. And because of that tradition that really has been upheld for that long, it makes it more verifiable and more believable and more factual on a genealogy level almost.
Well, have you ever met a Kohen?
I have, sure.
So a Kohen means priest in Hebrew. Bad name, but let's just go with it. A Kohen says, well, how do you know you're a Kohen? Because my father's a Kohen. Okay. How do you know he's a Kohen? Because his father was a Kohen. The Kohen can trace themselves back all the way to Aaron HaKohen. Aaron was Moses' brother. Moses and Aaron can trace themselves all the way back to the first man, Adam and Eve.
Oh, Adam and Eve.
Oh, they go all the way back to Noah, the Noah's flood. They can trace them, so we can trace it all back. And from there, you go all the way to the first man. There are people who can trace themselves all the way back to King David. I know these families. They link all the way, you know. And so we have these verifiable chains of people that and that we're part of and been in our societies, and we've been part of that chain as well. So yeah, it's all authenticated. That's not the challenge. The challenge is not whether or not this stuff is true. The challenge is whether or not we can do it, you know, given who we are, you know, 21st century person, you know, in the world that we live in today. Can we do that? And is I know it's ancient, but it's wisdom.
Right.
It's too old. I only want new. You only want new? Why would you only want new? Gee, you know, I'd love to meet Babe Ruth and hear how to hit a baseball.
Sure. Sure. But, you know, after that idea, I want to then focus then on the opportunity segment of what you're describing, because with opportunity comes this emotionally charged need to pursue it. And those are really the practical things that we can implement to make our lives better from the experience of enjoying Passover, partaking in it.
Yes, yes.
So then if we're going to focus on that, then it's the idea that we need to go beyond our restrictions, right?
Yes.
That was the word for restriction again, one more time, what is it?
Well, we say it's Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was Egypt.
Mitzrayim.
Yeah. Okay. A place of tsar, a place of limitation.
Got it. So we're in, Mitzrayim, right? It's this place where we need to go beyond the restriction. You know, this is the same day that I did this other interview, has not been released yet. By the time you're hearing this episode, it'll be released a few weeks after Passover. It's called How Do I Find Love? I just did an interview with Coach Daniel Ratner, right? And he was talking about, you know, the things that limit us from finding it, right? And from finding love. And, you know, I can't help but relate these two things together, because I think that he talked about the things that limit us from accomplishing that relationship status. And he talks about the things that, and it first comes from internal ideas, right? It first comes from internal roadblocks we have put up for ourselves that we don't recognize as roadblocks, that we just kind of accept they are the way they are. And so Passover then sounds like it's the opportunity to reflect and then to unteach what has bogged us down all this time. What part of Passover gives you that introspection to really embrace it?
Question. Such a good. So I'll tell you a few things. Number one, we have to get rid of all the leaven products that we have. Leaven in yeast. Yeast makes bread rise. We say, is your ego. You pump yourself up. Matzah, we call it poor man's bread. Okay? It's just flat. It's flour and water, and that's it. And it never rose. And once you mix the flour and the water together, you got 18 minutes, you got to pop that in the oven. It's got to go. And the ovens cook it in about one second. They go through these massive hot ovens, and they come out the other side on a conveyor belt. It's an amazing thing to watch. So you take the ego. Can you imagine what your life would be like if you weren't puffed up in your own ego and thinking, gee, what do they think of me? You know, am I being successful now? You know, cut out all that chatter, all that DIV, destructive inner voice. Just cut it out. So we clean all the hummets. We go in our cars, and we go to our offices, and we go into our houses, and we have to redo our kitchens and take all the anything that came in touch with leaven and get it out of the way or kosher it. It's a whole process. I'm not going to go through any of it now. And then we burn whatever we save hummets, and we burn it the morning of right before Passover at the Seder. That morning we collect it and we burn it, and what we do in my family is we write down what we call our Yetzer Hara. We write down our issues that we have on a piece of paper, and we throw them into this fire that's burning all the hummets. And it's it. You're free. I'm not that. I don't have those issues anymore. I don't have a temper anymore. I don't have a insecurity anymore. I don't come late to meetings anymore. That's my biggie. And and you get rid of it. And then at the Seder, the Passover meal, my daughter always said to me, every piece of matzah you eat is she calls it an emunah pill. What's that mean? Emunah means belief. Every time you eat a piece of matzah, it increases your belief in God. Not blind belief, but you let God into your life and feel God with each bite of matzah. Now, it does help to drink 4 cups of wine because it really opens you up. And that's part of the process as well. So, and you've gotten rid of your bad character traits. They're burned in the fire. They're gone. Your belief in God is so much higher. And you're a little shicker, a little open to being more of you and less of what people in society want you to be.
Wow. Yeah. There's, you know, I think that we oftentimes box ourselves in to a place of, you know, this is where people accept me as, which is, by the way, partly why I created Bad Jew, right? A lot of people get boxed into the Bad Jew label and then they forget to explore their Judaism or they forget to explore who they really are, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what happened to me. But
I was a very bad Jew, but I digress once again. Yeah. Wait, and after they do it, I'm such a bad Jew. God hates me and therefore I'll do whatever I want because God hates me. No, God loves you every second, no matter what you are. I mean, you could, you know, play by the rules better, but no one has ever lost. Never.
So I'm a bad Jew. God hates me. That's a bagel or that's a challah. That's leavened bread. And then, but actually, no, it's God loves me. That's matzah. That's what you're saying.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I think that there's a very freeing mindset about, you know, taking in more humility. And, you know, it's funny. I've heard of a lot of interpretations of matzah. Last year, I really focused in on the matzah being the poor person's bread, the bread of freedom or the poor person's, you know, the bread of slavery, however you look at it. But I would say that, you know, this year is actually the first year I've ever really heard people talking about it as it's more about ego. And so acknowledging that, you know, and seeing a deeper symbolism behind ego versus humility, I think is really wonderful. Is it common to see more practices of meditation and introspection during this time as well?
Well, there's always time for introspection and meditation. You know, that's prayer. People are like, oh, I don't want to pray. Praying prayer is, it's you and God talking. Now, I do have a set formula of prayer, okay? But I can riff off of it, right? Just like when you go to a concert, I don't know, take your favorite lead guitarist. And he's got to know the fundamentals of how to play a guitar or the guy is going to be terrible. So he's awesome. But when he then goes into the jam, you know, but he couldn't do the jam without the structure. So to his prayer and meditation, you need the structure, but then you could freeform during prayer and really go deep into yourself.
And so do you feel like a rock star when you lead a sermon then?
When I do a sermon?
Yeah.
Like a rock star. I have no idea what it feels like to be a rock star. And I don't think I could handle that challenge. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So, but a real question though, what is something that listeners can do to make their Passover experience better, even if they have never experienced a Seder before?
I think they should go into a good Jewish bookstore. Yes, get off the internet. Go into a real store with real people behind the counter. 613 The Mitzvah Store here on Beverly Boulevard, 7200 block of Beverly Boulevard in the Bay Area. The Shimon Kraft, go in there and say to them, do you have a Passover Haggadah that you would recommend for me? And there's like 20 of them that are great for you. And he'll pick one out for you. That's one way to do it. Yeah, there's so much richness in the Passover holiday. So start with the Seder, start with the Haggadah, because you can then spend the entire, it's a 7-day holiday. Eight in the United States and 7 in Israel. And you could spend the whole time reading the Haggadah, helping you understand what the holiday is. And by the way, it's only for 7 days that you don't eat, that you eat matzah. Then you're okay. Then we take you out of the ICU, the spiritual ICU, and you're going to clean villa hell and we put the ego back into you. And now you go, okay, I got the ego. I know what to do with it. I've been rehabilitated. All right, see you in a year.
All right, so wait a second. You said something that we totally glossed over there. Why is it 7 days in Israel and 8 days here or outside of Israel? Why,
it's just because technicality, we didn't know when the holiday began. And by the time they in Israel, it would take them by foot and by, you know, other means of communication a while to tell us outside in the exile when the holiday began. So we always begin it with, you know, with an extra day, maybe this day or that day. So now we have calendars and atomic clocks, but we still keeping an extra day because we weren't sure when. And there's mystical, deeper reasons for it. But yes, you have to keep an extra day when you're in the United States. If you don't like it, go make Aliyah. Also, go to aish.com, and Google Passover, and you'll be up all night reading about it. So that's another, you don't have to go to the bookstore. Yes, you can get it online. You know, Google what's Passover about, but aish.com is replete, and you can just overdose on all the material they give you. You'll be a walking encyclopedia.
Beautiful. So, you know, one thing as well that have been very central in a lot of my Passover experiences is that it seems like every single year there's another major current event that kind of is related. Not kind of, it really is related and really pressed into you during the Haggadah reading, during the Passover reading of the story of the Jews leaving Egypt. And there's a lot of fun ways to tell the story too, of course. But when it comes to Russia, Ukraine, that was last year's theme for what's going on. This year, I can't help but feel like it's obviously going to be about what's happening in Israel. And what is the Passover story when it comes to what's happening in Israel currently with its war against Hamas, and how can we grow from that experience?
You know, it says the kol dor v'dor, every generation they will write. So we say it in the middle of Passover. It says hisham to hisham ravusenu. They will, that they're always going to rise up and try to get us. Okay, anti-Semitism is just built into our lives. Don't think you can get rid of it. Anti-Semitism is a barometer of getting us together as Jews. If we didn't have anti-Semitism, we'd fly apart and not talk to one another. But when we're under attack, the Jews coalesce and get stronger. And unfortunately, we need to do that. And it's so important because we're everyone's God's children, but we have a special job to do. And the job is we need the anti-Semitism to keep us focused on accomplishing that job. But they will always rise up against us, but we will overcome them. So here, yes, Hamas, you know, whatever you want to call it, Islam, the Palestinians, whatever box you want to put that thing in. This isn't the end of it. You know, we all know that Gaza's just a chapter in it. They're always going to try to do this to us, but we will always overcome them. But we have to understand, what was the lesson? What did we learn? What we learned is we were totally being torn apart as Jews in Israel and Jews all over. And God did this event to us that glued us back together. And that is part and parcel of being a Jew. Expect it. Don't freak out from it. Learn from it. Be stronger from it. Be wiser from it. And let's not let it happen again.
Rabbi Markman, I think that's such a wonderful, strong note to end this episode on. The real story of Passover has now been told to the listeners. Listeners, I hope that it really...
My version.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent version. And I think it's such a great way to really look at Passover and help us go beyond the restrictions. Because oftentimes our minds are occupied with this, oh, woe is me, gloomy victimhood mentality when it comes to this. And yes, we certainly were victims on October 7th. But I think there really is a triumph and a strength that has been renewed for the Jewish people across the world with everything that is going on, despite the anti-Semitism abroad, despite the gaslighting that's been happening. I think it's very freeing to look at under that mindset. And I hope that for every person who is celebrating Passover, who's going to be sitting around a Seder table, that it is as liberating as leaving Egypt. So Rabbi Markman, What is the best way to reach you should someone want to get connected with HLA?
It's, well, you can use my first name, REA@HLA.com. If they want to send me an email.
Amazing. Also, for the listeners, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't tell you, be sure to follow HLA on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook at @H_Los Angeles. Be sure to follow. That way my job can stay secure. All right. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday on Bad Jew. Shalom.